Yo, JG, man, these motherfuckers ain't hyping up for me, man. I ain't been in this bitch in 2 months, man. We gotta turn this motherfucker up the D-way, man. You know what I'm saying? It's Detroit's number one podcast, Detroit's most dangerous podcast, man. Kick my nigga egg roll off in this motherfucker, man. Let's go.
It ain't tapped in, it's tapped out.
For real.
I'm from the motor.
That motherfucking motor. Come on, city fuck, I see that your nuts ain't real. It's a gangster party.
I got some niggas bang blue, leave you bleeding. I got some stories with blood, you wouldn't believe. I got some niggas bang blue, leave you bleeding. I got some stories with blood, you wouldn't believe. Niggas hating on me, I see it in their eyes. They don't want me to eat, and I can't figure out why. I got my hand out, and I bought my own supply.
And if it come down to it, I'ma slang my
baby,
own
mama
mind.
And my mama always can't wanna talk. Fuck my day up with they can't shit. Nah, nigga drunk, fuck a text up a day shit. Know the game, show a bitch a bag. Help her post her ass, teach her how to act. Niggas going out sad, y'all was just up. Should've booked me to consult, you would've been bossed up. I'm Eastside Egg Road, from the home of Boss Up. Quit my job on Instagram, told my boss ass up.
Oh, friends ain't really friends, just some cool ass niggas. Friends ain't really friends, just some bull ass niggas. Friends ain't really friends, just some cool ass niggas. Friends ain't really friends, just some bull ass niggas. Friends ain't really friends, just some cool ass niggas. Friends ain't really friends, just some bull ass niggas. Friends ain't really friends, just some cool ass niggas. Friends ain't really friends, just some bull ass niggas.
My life. They wanna move like me.
Intensity is at an all-time high. They want to walk like me, talk like me. Shout out to my nigga Eastside Agro, man. Checking in on that Stack Master. That's my boy. He doing his thing. He on everything right now, man. It's up one time for our nigga Sensei, man. Shout out to Big Dojo, man. Press Gang. All them niggas, man. What a nigga say? It's on a nigga scout. A dummy here. Whatever the fuck it is, man. Shout out to my nigga, man. Eastside Agro doing his thing. What's up, world? Welcome back. We in this motherfucker, man. What up and welcome back to the Say Hello to the Bad Guy podcast, man. I am your host, the devil himself, Cutty Kane. And welcome to Bad Guy Radio. Once again, it's Detroit's number one podcast and Detroit's fastest growing podcast brand. I'm sorry. Yeah, shoot, yeah. I ain't did this shit in a while, man. Let me get back in my groove, man. I know it's been a minute. I know the mother podcast been putting your kids to sleep and all that kind of shit. All the elevator music. But I'm back. I'm back. Listen, once again, we are back in the madhouse for another episode. Listen, it has been a minute since I've been in studio. So this is an episode that is long anticipated. It's long overdue. Now, before we get into today's show, I want to inform all of my listeners that I am not the blame for the delay in the release of today's episode. That's right, y'all. It's not my fault. Now, it's true. We did have a few scheduling conflicts going into today's show, me and my guests, but the ultimate blame, because we know nothing is never my fault, goes to my engineer. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. The blame and the delay is in the hands and on the shoulders of my engineer. So today we blaming JG. But no, all bullshit aside, man, big shout out to my man JG, man, behind the boards and the entire Audio Wave Network. The studio has been booked and busy lately. Business is booming, and it shows in the fact that 5 new trash ass podcasts drop every week. I swear to God, I can't keep up. This motherfucker's busting at the seams. And listen, I'm not hating, I'm just keeping it real. Y'all shows be ass cheeks, bro. The jokes is corny. The punchlines is weak. The mainstream topics. The vocabularies is limited. Jesus Christ. Listen, I can go on and on and on. So I'm back to save the world. Because we all know boring isn't the case here. I'm Detroit's voice. I am the voice of reason, the voice of logic. And this is the podcast that all the other podcasts listen to. And let me tell you how I know that's true. I see all of y'all in my story views all the time. They want to walk like me. They want to talk like me. So sit back, take notes. You're now watching the master at work. I'm in the studio fresh as hell as usual. I don't know why. Can't nobody see me. But I dressed up and everything to get here and come fuck with y'all today. This is the madhouse, man. Home of the hottest logo, the most relatable topics, the hottest guests. I'm the slickest media personality. I got the most sauce. I lead the league in all major statistical categories right now. Like I said, I'm the freshest. I smell the best. And my bitches look better than y'all's. I'm David Ruffin. And y'all, whoever those niggas was who was singing behind them. It's like that right now. And in the words of Egg Roll, if it get like that, it been like that. This is officially my 25th episode. And we are exactly 1 week from my 2-year anniversary. So for those who can count, that would put my episode release schedule at about once a month. I'm kind of lazy. I don't know. Man, I be busy, man. I got shit going on. My very first podcast dropped on Halloween of 2019 as a spinoff of the Good Girls podcast. Shout out to my little cousin TT and the Good Girls for opening the door for a real nigga. After featuring on her show, I launched my own podcast, and here I sit 2 years and 2 fired co-hosts later with downloaded streams across 60 countries and nearly 900 cities, which is an amazing feat for a nigga who talks once a month. So big shout out to me, but most of all, big shout out to all my supporters as well as my haters, because we can't forget and we cannot mention the haters. The haters have to get some attention as well, because that's what y'all like. Haters love attention. I'm here to give it to you. I give a hate nigga a full time job. We welcome you here. So again, shout out to all my nieces, all my nephews, and all the children I never had. Thank you for your continued support of the Bad Guy brand. So now that I got the introduction out the way, man, you know, what's new with y'all niggas, man? Is everything good out there? Is y'all all right? Y'all straight? Y'all still breathing? Obviously, you are if you're listening to this shit. Y'all niggas vaccinated or what? Who knows? So listen, since I'm something like a media rep, you know, I'm something like a media. I wouldn't say I'm a media rep. I'm something like one. It's only right that I talk about some media shit. So what's new in the news today, man? Looks like they finally got R. Kelly ass. Yeah, they got that. Yeah, the chocolate factory is closed for business.
Saying, nigga, my mind's telling me no.
Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah.
My body's telling me yeah.
Listen, the Pied Piper's days of playing with Kitty Coochie have come to an end. And I'm actually surprised. I'm surprised it took them this long to catch up with him. R. Kelly has been accused of being the hand that rocks the cradle for many years now. R. Kelly's escapades with underage women, and as his trial uncovered, also underage boys, is the worst kept secret in the history of the entertainment industry.
Do you like teenage girls?
When you say teenage, how are we talking?
Girls who are teenagers.
That nigga really needed a fucking definition of what a teenager was. It's like he's been playing in our face for generations. From his marriage to Aaliyah in 1994 when she was 15 years old, all the way to his sex tape that was uncovered in 2002 where he was videotaped urinating on another 15-year-old, which actually led to state charges for which he was surprisingly acquitted in 2008. I'm on a child pornography trial out of Chicago. Kelly's name has been associated with suspected sexual abuse against minors for years. I remember watching the tape of him pissing on that one girl on a bootleg DVD when I was in high school. I was 16. I'm 35 years old right now. So it's definitely no secret what R. Kelly has been up to for quite some time. And anybody with a pulse and a decent set of eyeballs pretty much knows what R. Kelly is about themselves. Testimony against R. Kelly in what is the first of potentially three federal trials, which may or may not occur, because now that he's convicted of the first trial, he's facing life. The prosecutors in the subsequent trials are determined if they're still going to hold trials. But testimony was given regarding events that spanned across three decades and included testimony from both male as well as female victims. So it appears that not only does Kelly like to fondle small kittens, he also likes to suck a little sausage too. Prosecution witnesses also included R. Kelly's personal physician, who testified Kelly has herpes and that he has been treating R. Kelly for herpes since as early as 2007. Fiesta, fiesta. Even the minister who officiated the wedding between him and Aaliyah was called as a witness for the prosecution and testified to marrying the two in a 1994 wedding ceremony in Illinois. The official list of charges in the indictment of R. Kelly included charges of racketeering, sexual exploitation of a child, kidnapping, bribery, violations of the Mann Act, you name it. According to them, he done it. Now, it's a very rare occasion that I cover mainstream media topics or that I speak on celebrities and their issues. But I'd be remiss if I didn't offer my opinion on R. Kelly, who is arguably one of the most decorated and admired musicians of our generation. But my opinion on the R. Kelly case is a simple one. R. Kelly is a very sick and very vile individual. This isn't a conspiracy. This isn't the white man destroying his legacy. He wasn't about to buy NBC. He has a problem. And that problem has been clear to everyone around him. However, his stature and fame enabled and made it possible for him to do what he did for as long as he did. And I personally believe more people should have went to jail behind it, including the parents who are pimping their daughters out to him. They was pimping their fucking daughters out. Let's not forget that. But the managers, his groupie recruiters, everybody who normally engaged in that shit belongs in jail right with his ass. No, there's no defense, you know, for the level of disregard and blatant breaking of the law and the destroying of lives he's responsible for. Not to mention, he kept taping this shit. His actions not only occurred behind closed doors, they got tapes, pictures, videos. And this is a conversation that's been talked about, like I said, across three decades. And it blows my mind the level of defense his actions have been receiving, especially from the black community, you know, especially from black women. Black women have surprisingly come to the defense of R. Kelly in droves. when you think they be the most upset, you know, especially seeing as the majority, if not all of his victims were black or Hispanic or minorities. He didn't rape any white girls. The week of his conviction, his music sales went up 500% and his music streams were up 22%. Those stats come directly from Rolling Stones. At a time when the Me Too movement is at an all-time high, and where even the smallest sexual misstep can cost you everything, black women have come to the defense of R. Kelly, even in the face of multiple accusations against minor women. Black women were calling the girls fast and making comments like they knew what they were doing, and some even made comparisons to molestations in their own families and communities as no proof that these actions were prevalent and common. And extended beyond celebrity status. I don't get it, but that was they motherfucking excuse for it. And it wasn't just women, you know, males. Some of you guys are fathers. We're also coming to the defense of R. Kelly. Comparing his indiscretions and his relationships with minors to the likes of other well-known celebrities with questionable sexual backgrounds, like Elvis and Hugh Hefner and Jerry Lee Lewis and Woody Allen, who are all white celebrity entertainers with histories of contact or sexual illicit relationships with minors. Now, I won't downplay systematic racism in the court system. So before all you Black Lives Matters, overnight activists and Facebook revolutionists come for me, let me state that first. But since when does bad behavior become the justification for bad behavior? Where's the accountability for people who are supposed to be adults? It doesn't matter, not even in the least bit, what the next person did, whether they're black, white, purple, green, whatever, in regards to what you did and what you have to face when it's time to pay for your actions. Deflection is at an all-time high, and accountability is at an all-time low in the black community. And I'm going to be honest, you niggas is really starting to give me snitch vibes. The way y'all get to pointing fingers at the actions of other individuals when somebody you love or admire gets picked up. Soon as y'all heroes get in some shit or has to answer for shit, the black community immediately runs to social media to make memes and form paragraph opinions on how what the white man did or how the next man got away with what as a justification of actions that actually deserve punishment. Niggas is giving me rat and snitch vibes. Just being honest. Fuck R. Kelly. Now, if his songs come on and I'm in the mood to hear them, I'll let the motherfuckers play. Shit, I already heard the songs anyway, so there's no real consequence to me not continuing to listen. I mean, shit, he already cashed those checks already. But I'm not going to go out of my way to say I support him. Y'all weird as hell. I mean, until it's your daughter. Right? Moving along. As celebrities, and this is a disclaimer for all you, because I got to say, I mean, for me too, because I sure hate it for any of those bitches I was giving 1,800 shots in Ecstasy 2 to come back looking for me. So I'm speaking for myself. I'm sorry, bitch. I'm sorry, ladies. I thought you liked it. As celebrities or people in power, you have to realize what you're facing and kind of move accordingly or end up the next nigga in the courtroom on the chopping block. If the R. Kelly saga taught us anything, it taught us that when you're rich and famous, nobody really cares if you're a piece of shit. But again, fuck R. Kelly. Moving along. Also, what's the
order? Being honest, somebody sent me something on my phone and said that I hog tied her.
I don't know how to hog tie people. What would I hog tie? My kids is listening to this. All of this.
Yeah, you about to get hog-tagged your motherfucking self, buddy. I can guarantee they hog-tagging your ass right. They gonna have him in jail like, seeing I'm a flirt. What else is in the news, man? Unemployment is gone, man. The PPP done dried up. I ain't seen y'all bitches in the airport catching flights and not feelings in a minute. Y'all good? Fellas, I ain't seen a money brick pick. You know, is 100,000 still the new 10,000? Milagro tequila sales are up, and down Julio 1942 sales are down. The craziest part is unemployment is gone, but it's still taking me 45 minutes to an hour to get two McDoubles and a Happy Meal from McDonald's. You niggas need to go back to work around this bitch. One thing you motherfuckers have taught me is y'all would do anything in the world for some money except go to work. I said, if nobody else said, it's okay to have a job. Because you niggas say y'all won't work for $10 an hour, and then y'all go to prison, end up working for 92 cents a day. So it's nothing wrong with that. Inflation is sitting in. Minimum wage is going up. So it doesn't even really matter. Shit, a four-piece nugget like $3. They even went up on the price of Little Caesars Hot and Ready Pieces, man. Yeah, they went up. I wouldn't buy them. I wouldn't feed that shit to my dog, but you know, hey, they the price is up. We are continuing to see the fallout and aftermath of COVID-19. As I told you guys before, once the FDA mandate came out, there were going to be a lot of jobs requiring that you be vaccinated. So if you didn't see this coming, you probably need your vision check. It's okay. It should be apparent to everybody that the COVID-19 disease, along with any other mutations, remixes, or sequels, is pretty much here to stay. Deaths in the United States are approaching 800,000 since the pandemic touched our shores. And although cases are growing in pockets, we are far removed from the lockdowns of 2020. As it stands today, nearly 7 billion vaccine doses have been administered, and roughly half of the world's population has received at least one dose of the COVID-19 vaccine. Businesses, both large and small, have instituted mandates and regulations in regards to employees or patronage by customers who choose not to get vaccinated. Walkouts and demonstrations have been formed by medical workers in the city who oppose mandates. And I'll be honest with you guys, I'm all about free will. I'm all about free speech. It's your body, so it's indeed your choice. But as a business owner, and also as an employee of a business, I do understand that your freedoms can't infringe on the freedoms of another person. So just the way it's your choice to get the mandate, or I'm sorry, to get the vaccine, it's my choice of whether you want to work for me or not. Life is about choices. Right? So you can choose to quit the hospital where they need the mandate, and you can go work at McDonald's so I can get my fucking McDoubles in less than 45 minutes. Life is about, see, that's a choice. These people ain't finna keep playing with y'all ass. And you know, all that, this is my choice. It's my body, gonna have your ass in the unemployment line. And I know all y'all are entrepreneurs and CEOs and all that other type of shit, generational wealth, all that other jazz y'all be on your Facebook page just talking. I know that's the case. So have it as it may. Do what you do. But I can tell you with 100% conviction, the world isn't closing again. And these companies are going to move in the direction that they see fit. The Brooklyn Nets sent Kyrie Irving home. And can't none of y'all niggas shoot the ball as good as him. So I'm pretty sure Jimmy Johns can find somebody else to do your job. And since we're on the subject of jobs, let's get to the reason all of us are here today. The most anticipated show in the history of Bad Guy Radio. Welcome to Plant Life.
FMLA,
bitches.
FMLA,
I ain't going in today. I'm about to
FMLA,
and I ain't even about to play. I'm about to
FMLA,
woo.
FMLA,
bitches.
FMLA,
I ain't going in today. I'm about to
FMLA,
and I ain't even about to play. I'm about to
FMLA, I ain't going in today. I'm about to FMLA.
FMLA,
at the club turning up all night like
hey.
Woke up with a hangover, had a little thing over. I ain't about to go in, I just want the day
uh-huh.
I just want to lay over, man. I gotta stay sober, just got rolled over. I ain't about to stay
hell
over, man. I gotta leave, dog. I don't want to see
okay.
y'all. I don't want to be y'all. I'm about to leave y'all. All these damn attitudes, everybody mad as hell. I'm trying to have a good day. Everybody sad as hell, man. Y'all fucking up my mood. I can't even eat my food, man. These motherfuckers rule. FML ladies fool.
Bitch.
Got my fit looking so right.
Hey.
about to have a good ass night. About to buy a good ass pint. About to have a good ass time. FMLA. FMLA.
And I ain't even about to play, I'm about to.
FMLA.
And I ain't going in today, I'm about to.
FMLA. FMLA. FMLA.
And I ain't even about to play, I'm about to.
FMLA.
And I ain't going in today, I'm about to.
FMLA.
Come on. FMLA. FMLA. I ain't fucking with you niggas, about to. They in this bitch cutting up, I'm about to. Come on. Time for these motherfucking attitudes and all this bullshit at work, man. About to FMLA on these motherfuckers. Enjoy my motherfucking dice, nigga.
This nigga spitting. Listen, man, today's show is about plant life, man. The manufacturing and production sector, factory workers. Some love it, most hate it, but there is no denying the role plant jobs play in the economic infrastructure of not only Detroit, but Southeast Michigan as well. Detroit is most well known outside of Michigan as the Motor City. And Southeast Michigan is very unique in its financial makeup, due to the fact that there isn't a large influx of outside cash. We don't have tourism. We don't have amusement parks. We don't got Cedar Point. We don't got Six Flags. We don't have beaches. We don't got resorts. There isn't really a large celebrity presence here. So the economic makeup in Detroit isn't as diverse as some larger cities. I've said it once, and it's funny to some, but it's true. If you aren't working in the medical field or answering phone calls in the call center or working at Quicken Loans, if you have a tax-paying job in Michigan, it's most likely tied to the automotive field. Unless you're delivering shit for Amazon or DoorDash or some shit like that, too. Can't leave them out. That's a very big portion of the employment pool in Michigan. Rather, you work for the big three, which is GM, Ford, and Stellantis, formerly known as Chrysler, or you work for a parts or sub-supplier, rather it's Faurecia, Magna, Dana, Adecco, Dakota, Fontana. It's everywhere. Shout out to all my listeners and all those plants too, man. I told y'all niggas I was going to shout y'all out. Pank Dog, everybody, Faurecia, everybody, I got y'all. Y'all on the flow. But if you have a job in Detroit or Southeast Michigan, chances are it's tied in some way to the automotive industry. This is the Motor City, and cars are just what we do here. The singular focus on the manufacturing sector is both the story of great wins, but also of many losses. Since Michigan doesn't have a diverse portfolio of income, our city lives and dies by the automotive industry, with most of the latter being dying in most recent years. Detroit, which was once a city of over a million, as late as 1990, has seen a drastic population decline, with the current population standing at less than 700,000. A declining population leads to a declining tax base, and a declining tax base leads to less money for things such as schools, public and overall city services. Since it reached its peak population in 1950, when the city of Detroit ranked fifth in the country in terms of total population, there has been a nearly 70% decline in Detroit's total population. And in 2013, Detroit filed the largest municipal bankruptcy in American history and became the largest U.S. city by population to file for Chapter 9 bankruptcy, with an estimated debt upwards of $20 billion. If you ask the experts what caused this decline, you'll get a variety of answers. You know, some will blame bad government. Others will blame location desirability. But most who have a true understanding of finance and chain economics will tell you that the decline of Detroit is directly tied to the auto industry, or the decline of the auto industry, which has been a pillar of Detroit since the early 1920s. Once the jobs disappeared, so did the people. And when they left, so did their tax dollars, leaving the city in ruins. Desolate neighborhoods, empty schools, closed rec centers, along with massive debt and a damaged infrastructure. Detroit has recently seen an upswing as the city welcomes more diverse companies and job offerings, but the blue-collar factory workers still by far outnumber most industries in Southeast Michigan. And today we'll discuss that decline. Now, plant jobs aren't what they used to be. The pay scale hasn't kept up with inflation. The days are long. The work is hard. And in the summer, the days can get kind of hot. But the life once enjoyed by the plant workers of the past has not so much been enjoyed by the newer generation of plant workers. Profits have soared, and the companies have grown. However, that success has not quite trickled down to the workers. The companies have resorted to the use of temp workers, who work the same jobs and hours as permanent workers, and they have, I want to say less than stellar treatment is given to this second class of citizens. And the UAW, which is also known as the United Auto Workers Union, who is federally recognized as the legally bound labor representation of this body of workers, whether they be temps or full time, has become a shell of its former self and is no longer the union that once commanded respect, fair wages, and treatment of its members. Through federal investigation, there have been found to be complicit and intertwined with the very companies they negotiate against. Over the past 2 years, there have been 16 convictions in what have been described as schemes aimed at bribing union negotiators for favorable contract terms. Terms that affect the financial earning and benefits received by the workers whom the UAW represents. Michigan is recognized as an at-will, right-to-work state. However, union workers are subject to collective bargaining and negotiated pay and wages, something big companies fear as it decides their flexibility with getting rid of workers. That's just the business aspect. Plant life is deeper than the surface. And even though plant workers are regular people just working to make a living, they are some of the most revered, talked about, and hated people in the city. Some of it is jealousy. Some of it is ignorance. But even with the declining market, plant work is still some of the most sought after work in Michigan. You can sell a referral like you can sell food stamps around this bitch. Somebody's always going to buy it. And shout out to the referrals, because, you know, like, while I'm on the subject, I got a lot of family in the Big Three. But I had to get my referral from a chick that I was fucking. You know, none of my family ever looked out and hooked a real nigga. So shout out to Shelby. I don't fuck with you no more, but you dropped the bag on a nigga, and I appreciate that. My profit sharing check was very nice. Now, moving along. We get talked about as plant workers. But we some of the cons. We had all the concerts. We some vacation taking, Yeezy wearing, new iPhone talking, Benny Hanna carry out lunch bag, eating on a 12-minute break, motherfuckers. So let's step into the day-to-day life of a plant worker. Now today, I have a guest. I know y'all haven't seen me with a guest in a while. Today we welcome April to the show. April is a former senior manager at an undisclosed Big Three plant, who rose from the ranks of a union-represented temporary worker all the way to the ranks of senior management when she shed her union status to become a member of the ops. And she's here to tell her story from both sides of the fence. So the first thing I would like to do is welcome April to the Madhouse. April, welcome to my home.
Hey.
Now, April, welcome to the show. So just to give me some background, how did you come to working in the plant?
So I originally, I went through the whole undergrad situation, finished school, and I originally came out of undergrad and went straight into the Postal Service.
Okay.
So after the Postal Service, I saw my best friend. One day I was asleep. I used to work a real early shift. I was asleep one morning, and my best friend called me and said, you know, Chrysler got their website open. Go ahead and apply. I didn't have anything else to do. I was kind of upset. They weren't giving me a permanent position within the Postal Service. So I took a leap of faith. I applied for the position and got a call back for a temp, for the evaluation for a temp position.
Okay, so you were a temp at the post office, and you went from being a temp at the post office to being a temp at the plant.
Yeah.
Okay, so what made the plant temp situation more attractive than the post office situation?
It was the actual chances of becoming a permanent employee. So now within most companies hire everyone temporarily initially.
Ain't that a bitch?
I know, right? So they hire you temporarily initially, and then whatever their setup is for you to get rolled over to permanency is what you have to follow. Within the Postal Service, I talked to one of my counterparts. It took her 14 years to become a permanent associate.
What the fuck?
And then she did not carry her seniority. So as soon as she rolled over, after those 10 plus years, she became a day one associate.
She should have stole something out the mail for that shit.
Exactly. So when I found that out, it was, of course, I'm going to do what I do, and that's come up with the next plan.
Exactly. So... So you say your first job within the plant was at a big three plant. You were not at any sub plants.
Nope.
And you started off as a TPT. What does a TPT stand for?
Temporary. Ooh, what is TPT? I done forgot.
I think it's temporary part-time, right?
Yeah, temporary part-time associate or something like that.
Okay, so as a temporary part-time associate, did you work part-time hours?
Initially. When I first started. So when we first started, I remember we came in, we worked full time. And then it was all of a sudden you got that phone call telling you your hours were cut and that you would be told on a week to week basis. You would call in and you were told on a week to week basis what your hours would be for that next week.
OK, so what was the information on what hours you work? Were they made known to you before you took the position, or was it just a surprise like?
It was a surprise because it was one of those, it's a temporary position, but you're going to work the hours.
Okay. So they basically, it's kind of like a bait and switch. They're not actually, they're not 100% clear. Okay. All right. So what was your starting pay rate as a TPT?
Ooh, I got to think back. Life has changed a lot. I want to say it was in the $15, $16 range. It had to have been, yeah.
Okay, so you started at the $15, $16 range at the TPT. Now, how did you feel obtaining this position? Was it something like, were you proud? Like, okay, listen, I'm finally in the plant. Because I know, like, coming up, the plant jobs were where everybody wanted to be. Was it, but did you feel like you really accomplished something? Like, you feel like you made it over the hump, or?
Nah. You didn't? So, I come from an automotive family, but most are all management. For me, it was, let me get in here so I can do what I do.
All right, so let me ask you this. About how long did it take for your family to start asking to borrow money after you had hired into the plant? Because, you know, once they hired out, you got that plant job, they wanted, everybody got a problem and everybody got an issue. About how many checks did you get under your belt before somebody asked to borrow some money?
Nobody really asked for anything.
Oh, wow.
My family pretty good. You know, they handle their business, so.
Okay, well, can I borrow some money then? Because I'm fucked up.
No, I got you.
That's what I want to hear, April. That's what I want to hear. So you start at the TPT position. What were some of your duties? Give me some information on some of your experience. What did you do on your first day?
On my first day, my first day in the plant, I remember we were walked and we had to do some safety stuff. So it was literally like we were walked through the plant to be displayed for everybody on the line. Because I remember the line was running. But as we walked past, everybody stopped. So they was just watching.
So you say they walked you in and put you on a whole stroll is what they did, is what they're going to display.
You know what it kind of felt like.
Okay,
that.
Okay. So did you have your did you have your leggings on your first day?
No, I had jeans on.
Oh, so you?
I had jeans on. I didn't graduate to yoga pants until I was full time.
Oh wow! See, you was behind the eight ball, baby. See, if you would have, you probably would have got the full time of life faster if you had them leggings on. So as a TPT. Because, you know, there's a lot of conflict I hear and that I see and experience as well working in the plant. As a TPT, how was your relationship with the full-time workers? Because I hear it's a lot of beefs, a lot of friction. What was your relationship like working as a TPT with some of the full-time workers?
For me, I didn't have a problem.
Okay.
I got on the line and I think cool people are just cool. You know, you get right in. Now I will say with the way that people were rolled over to become full-time, I was mad about that.
What do you mean by, was there a certain process or?
Oh yeah.
What was the process like?
And it's something I have a big problem with, and I'm sure you do as well.
Okay.
Or all union members as well.
Talk to me.
The whole, you're ranked by the last four of your social.
Okay. That's seniority. That doesn't really control the
rollover.
But
it was how we were rolled over.
That's how you guys rolled over.
That was how I was rolled over. I was almost at the end of the list because I'm 8125.
Okay.
So literally everyone I came in with on day one, they rolled over well before me. And I remember calling the union the union membership because the day people got rolled over, that's a big thing. So every TPT that you know, you're getting phone calls and you're getting texts. I'm full time now. I got rolled over. So you're waiting for the call too. Right. I never got the call. I was livid.
So did you FMLA out that day?
No, I did not. But let's just say they didn't get nothing out of me that day.
Okay. Because I'll be honest with you, it's like I work in the manufacturing sector. I'm full time. I went through the TPT thing. I was in the TPT for a long time, maybe like 4 or 5 months. But I had an appreciation for it because I knew people who worked in the plant. And you know, I'm really a person. I'm a big principle person. Like right is right, wrong is wrong with me. So it was like I kind of found it weird, you know, just to see that a lot of these people were doing the same jobs. And everybody was getting different pay, different benefits. It had different titles, you know. So, you know, once I actually got into a position to where I was full time, I tried to do what I can to kind of reach back and make the path for the people behind me a little bit easier. Like I have this little event that I throw every year. It's called TPT Appreciation Day, where I feed, you know, whenever we get a bonus, I try to do something for them, but I have this event every year. It was called TPT Appreciation Day, where I come out and I feed everybody.
Okay.
And, you know, I just feel like it's something that you should do because, I mean, it's all about reaching back. And I would want somebody to do that for me if I was in the situation. You know, and then plus, I get to see all the new TPTs come on to my line and take them up under my wing.
I cannot.
And let them know if you ever need anything, I'm here for you.
Of course.
If they ever take you off the schedule and you just happen to be $30, maybe $40 short on the bill, come see me. So you were a TPT for how long?
Oh, I got to really think about it. Like that was years ago.
Man, your brain is slipping, ain't it? Goddamn.
Man.
How long?
So, I still live.
How long would you say you were a TPT?
I would think I was a TPT for probably 6 months.
6 months. Okay, so you went from TPT, you switched over to full-time. Now you're mm-hmm. a full-time plant worker.
Mm-hmm.
How long were you a full-time plant worker?
Full-timer. I was a full-timer for maybe another 6 months, 6 to 8 months, I believe.
So you went from, you were full-time for 6 months. You were a TPT for 6 months. You were full-time for 6 months. And then at that point, you went into management.
Yep.
So you... How did that work? So you were that goddamn, did you know somebody?
Craziest kind of turn of events. It was when I came in, it was during that period where things were still shaky. So mm-hmm. you had plants that were shutting down. You had people moving between plants. So I was getting laid off in the process of me getting promoted. Okay. And I was applying within the actual website for management positions the entire time that I was on the line. The goal when I walked in was, this isn't it. I'm trying to get that job. So and it was pointing at the management.
Okay, so you had a plan to become a manager at the time. Definitely. Okay, so basically, like, you know, you saw kind of, I'm assuming with the seniority thing, you were kind of low, so you kind of like, okay, it's time for me to get the fuck off this line.
Yeah, but it happened very matter-of-factly. A person who I say is my mentor, because this person actually just picked up conversation with me on a daily basis. This was a fellow manager, a fellow black woman manager, which we know in a white male dominated industry, that's few and far between. But we struck up conversation one time. The line was down, and we struck up conversation about something. And somehow the conversation got on undergrad. And I said something to the effect that I was done with undergrad. And she was like, she stopped me and was like, wait, you're done? You don't have a few more classes before you can walk? And I was like, no, I fully graduated. My degree is in the frame at the crib. And she was like, bring me your resume tomorrow. And that was literally the start of like my trajectory. I brought my resume in the next day. I got laid off. I got moved to another plant. And after I got laid off at that other plant, so this probably happened in a matter of 60 to 90 days, I got my interview for management and went straight through.
Okay, so how would you describe your relationship? Because with you working in the capacity as a TPT and a full-time worker, you would have been union represented, correct?
Yep.
Okay, so how would you describe your relationship with management as a union worker?
As a union worker, I was just like most union workers. You don't want the manager on your line. You don't want them in your space. You want to do your thing.
As a union represented worker. What was your relationship with the union?
Like, oh, with the union, I barely ever interfaced with them.
Okay.
Like, so, I have to be honest. I have a thought about the union.
So when you were on the floor, you never talked to your stool.
I didn't need them.
Okay.
I didn't need them.
Okay. So after you transitioned over, to management, how did your relationship with you, because now, you know, you're a manager, you're not union represented anymore. You're kind of overseeing the union workers, and the union officials are kind of charged with challenging you.
Yeah.
How did you
direct opponent?
so you go from being represented by the union, actually kind of going against the union. Uh-huh. So now you're a manager. What were some of your duties as a manager?
So make sure people are where they should be on time. Make sure the line runs. Make sure we are defect free. Make sure any defects that leave our area are caught and are fixed before they reach the end of the line. Any disciplinary things, you know, what a manager does.
All right. So were you in a position where you managed any of the people that were previously your coworkers?
Yes.
Okay. And who would you, and how was your relationship versus being the boss to certain people that you were previously maybe friends or going out to lunch with, or how was that?
I am actually grateful that I'm grateful for it. I didn't have any kind of rift. There was really no separation because I stayed true to myself. I wasn't on ulterior motives. I was about just doing my job. Do your job. We're going to do our job. We're going to get out of here. So I didn't have a problem with the transition at all. I still rocked out with the same people I worked on the line with, were the same people I would visit in other areas who I used to work the line with, but now I was in a supervisor position.
Okay.
And I think it gave me an edge also with other managers who didn't have that relationship.
Now, let me ask you a question. In terms of management, who would you say is harder to manage? Would it be male or females? Because I hear them pretty bitches don't like to work.
So I have to break them up in groups because you meet so many different people. Like, there is every type of person within the plant. So if you're talking about the men who don't want to do anything, we're talking about high seniority, the people over in repair who got about 5 years left, mm-hmm. 5 years left and they're retiring. They really don't care. You're not going to tell them what to do. They're just coming to knock out that shift and they going home.
Okay.
Now the pretty girls on the line, they're just distracted.
Distracted.
I think very often they're very distracted
by what?
By the young men around them. You know, you have to have a certain degree of self-control everywhere you go.
Do you?
Yes. I had to have that same sense of self-control, and let's just say I failed.
Okay. Well, listen, we're gonna get into that because, you know, it's definitely a jungle in that. That's one thing I tell everybody about the plant, man. You know,
we are human.
Listen, a plant has everything the city has: sex, money, and murder. And that's for damn sure. Now, this is another question I got to ask because this was sent in from one of my listeners. I told my listeners that I would chime in with some of their requested questions. Is it really true what they're saying about the women's bathroom?
I hate to say it, but the things that go on in those bathrooms, the things that are found in the bathrooms, left behind in the bathrooms, the things that happen at break time up on the roof.
Okay, let's not give away what we can sell now. Let me get to that. I got some questions. I got some questions regarding that as well. So now you are a manager.
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming succeeding because you look like you excelled and you kind of got up on the escalator and the elevator kind of fast.
Life is good.
So now you're saying that you're the adversary of the union representatives. So when you say the adversary, kind of explain to me that relationship between them becoming your adversary. Like, what are you guys arguing? Is there meetings? How does this the relationship become adversarial?
They have a job. Okay. Their job is to defend their union membership.
Okay, so these are representatives. I'm assuming they're called stewards.
Yep, your union stewards. Some I got along amazingly with. There are some that my relationships carried over from me being on the line. There are some that I thought I had relationships with that carried over on the line. I know a lot of people know their favorite union steward.
Okay, so you're dealing with union representatives. So is this like, are these people that are defending them when they're having what, write-ups or?
Yep. So the protocol for if you have any kind of disciplinary feedback to give a employee, you have to notify their union steward that that is going to happen so that they can come and defend their actual union member at the table with the management, the employee, and then the union membership.
So a steward is kind of like a lawyer.
Pretty much.
Okay, so in terms of stewards being lawyers, I'm assuming, you know, just like lawyers, some are probably better than others. Mm-hmm. What would you say is your overall opinion in terms of how the representatives are represented? Are they good lawyers? Are they public defenders? Like, do they actually defend to the best of their abilities? What could you say that some of the relationships were good, some of them were bad? So as a manager, I'm assuming a bad relationship would indicate they're doing their job, right? You shouldn't get along with the person that you're going against at the table.
Actually, no, because in my position, I knew what it was. I knew what that relationship was between the union and management. So I already knew about, yeah, you're going to come to the table and you have to defend your union membership. But you had a lot of other stuff going on just was undercut. You had people who would say one thing and then in front of their union membership would do something just real shady. Like,
give me some examples.
You'll have people where you have several union stewards who will come and have a whole conversation with you about the associate. And y'all, and this is a common place. You will have a conversation where you will make an agreement to where when you get to the table, it's more smooth. Mm-hmm. It's not drawn out. It's not a long drawn out argument. So very often you'll have a sidebar conversation. And then when you get to the table, you have this acting show that goes on. And I don't like that.
Okay. So let's kind of break it down for the people. Cause like a lot of our listeners, you know, I kind of understand the plant lingo. You know, you kind of understand the plant lingo, but a lot of my listeners never step foot in the plant.
Right.
So we got to kind of explain to them what we mean by like this table.
You have to illustrate it. So yeah, right. If I'm going to give the scenario. Let's say one of my employees come to the line late, third time in a row. I've already warned you, told you what time you need to be back, because I'm not the kind of manager who's just going to write you up for no reason or at the drop of a dime. I'm going to give you a chance to straighten it up. So if I have talked to you two times, third time, still not corrected, I let you know that you are going to have feedback and I'm going to call your union steward. You're on notice.
Okay,
that is the lingo that's used.
Okay, so notice means you're getting written up.
Yeah.
Okay, so you write somebody up. You know, their union steward comes out and defends, mm-hmm. and you say, like, you guys come to an agreement. So is this agreement on, like, hey, I'm going to fire this person, I'm going to suspend this person, I'm going to, how does...
No, typically it's to, you're talking to them because they can go and they can see where they are in the disciplinary process. So they're kind of bartering what they can, okay, you have a disciplinary to give them, but how are we going to make this to where it's least consequential to the employee?
Okay, and is that something that comments happen? Like, are they actually defending? Is it...
Very often they do that, and some do it more effectively than others.
Are there situations where you see them not defend the person that's in question or in trouble?
Yeah, you got some shady union stewards out there who will talk real shady behind somebody's back and then go to the table and act like they're going to bat. And then right as soon as the employee goes back to the line and is dismissed from the conversation, it goes right back to that other thing.
Okay, so, yeah, so that's interesting. Okay, so in your career, how many times would you say you wrote people up? Are we talking hundreds, 50?
I'm gonna say hundreds. I've been in the HR office several times. I have unfortunately terminated people.
How many people would you say you fired in your career?
Not many. I have given people, I probably fired not even more than five.
fired
in my career. And that was almost 8 years.
How many you suspend?
I gave out quite a few 3 days and a nice bundle of 30s.
Nice bundle. Ooh, a bundle of 30. So is that when you say you give out 30s, is that 30 days off?
So that is 30 days off with no pay. That is part of the disciplinary progression.
Okay. So give me some of the reasons for some of these fires and these suspensions. Like what?
I never had any of the illicit ones that you hear the major stories about. I've heard a lot about them. Most of mine were just progressions.
Progression.
The most common one was tardiness.
Tardiness. So just people just not coming to work. Mm-hmm. What's the silliest reason you ever seen someone lose their job?
Silliest reason someone ever lost their job. Easily fighting.
Fighting.
Fighting it's on like, the job.
Silly? Like, that ain't... Motherfucker thought I was a hoe.
So for me... Unless you put your hands on me, you're not going to mess up my game.
What was the most serious reason you seen someone lose their job?
Most serious reason, definitely drugs.
Drugs.
Drugs. And we not talking about the green leafy kind. We talking about illicit hard drugs.
So what do you mean? Like, are they getting high on the line? Are they smoking rocks? Are they on the BMS?
You got people out there working.
They out there, working. Selling drugs.
You got people working.
Selling drugs. Okay, wow. So like, how do you guys catch, y'all doing an undercover bias in this motherfucker or what?
No, very often people make mistakes. When you get comfortable, you make mistakes. I remember one day in particular, myself and a fellow senior manager were on the cart. Everybody who knows about the plant knows about the cart that rides through.
Okay.
Management rides through on golf court carts.
Okay.
And we were riding through and I looked over and right on the blue pathway on the walkway, it was a whole... And I'm going to see, you know, I can eyeball something. It was a whole half on the walkway.
A whole half? Is this my marijuana?
Yeah. Okay. This is a hot 14 to 14. Yeah.
Okay. So now there are several rumors, and I'm going to say rumors.
Okay.
Because it's all alleged that there's a lot of drinking and drug usage.
Oh,
going on with the plan. Now, I've never seen any of this myself.
Holidays and weekends, the drinking goes on. It typically waits until after lunch. And then you see a lot of bottles that are the wrong color that are supposed to be Pepsi or Coke. And they ain't the color of Pepsi or Coke.
It's not the color of Pepsi.
It's not the color. So, the color is a little off.
So you guys are watching the bottles.
Yeah, but this is something that you have to pay attention to within the industry as well. You have people who are dependent on substances, and if they don't have what they're dependent on, you see it. So like after lunch, you know who your alcoholics are if they don't have their drink. I hate to say it. When I was on the line, a guy came back from lunch. I guess he was moving too fast and he had to get his oops up and he left powder all over his nose.
Oh my God. So
it was crazy.
So you've witnessed drug usage as both on the line as well as being.
I've never witnessed the usage, but I've seen the residuals of the usage.
Okay. Have you ever had to discipline someone for alcohol or drug usage?
No. I have not. When I was in my early days in management, there was a girl at another plant that I was training at, and she got so drunk. She was on the line trying to put a truck together with her shoes and socks off. It was the craziest thing I've ever seen.
That's interesting. Was her feet done?
I don't remember.
Oh, see, yes.
I don't look at stuff like that, of course. You know, I look at stuff like that, but in that capacity, I was like, baby, why your shoes and socks off?
it gets kind of hot in the plant during the summertime.
Yeah, especially when you've been drinking.
Now, question. So this is the most talked about issue.
Okay.
This is a hot topic amongst everybody. The plant relationships.
Okay.
The plant wives, the plant husbands, and the, you know, and so
people shouldn't even bother.
Well, listen. I done played with a couple coochies on the line myself now. You know what I'm saying? Listen, you in the plant a lot, you know, you in there 5, 6, 7 days a week sometimes.
I get it.
10, 12 hours.
I get it. I told you, I fell in the loop too.
Okay, so this is something that you witnessed during your time.
Mm-hmm.
Was it as an employee or as a manager?
It was as an employee.
As an employee. I'm saying, were you, I'm a mean employee. You're
as
employee,
a line. As online. A line worker.
Okay, yeah. So you didn't have any, did you have any relationships with people as a manager?
Yes, I did.
You did? So, Was it the same person or?
No.
Okay, so have you?
I at least stayed on my level.
Okay, so you have been involved in plant relationships during your time. And so how did that work out for you? Like, was it?
So when I was online, it was, you you know, you get caught up in situations. Situationships, as Jada would like to say.
No, I don't know Jada. I don't know.
Well, you get caught up in situations and, yeah, you know, I got caught up in situations. Yeah.
Have you ever, so I mean, we listen, this is the madhouse, baby. We don't talk to us in circles. We can't even hear the story around here.
I was just like anybody else. You know, you spend a lot of time with those people in that plant. You spend a lot of time, especially when y'all on overtime. So you get cool with people. And, you know, I was single. He was single. And yeah.
Have you ever supervised someone you had a relationship with?
Now, once I made the transition, yes, oh. I made the transition and happened to be managing someone I had been with.
I gonna lie, that sounds like fun to me.
I also had the situation where union leadership helped spread rumors when I was management of things that I had never done.
Oh, wow. So when you say union leadership, are we going back to these counterparts or these adversaries?
These stewards.
Okay, stewards. And so...
Well, one.
Okay, so it's with the situations with the stewards. Mm-hmm. Like, so I'm assuming that you would only interact with the steward in the event that I'm assuming you were disciplining one of the employees.
No, we would. You know, you're in the plant all together. So a union steward, they're riding around the floor. You're riding around the floor. So it was always, for me, at least, I can only speak for myself. For me, it was, you know, I was always speaking to people. It was all love, you know, as long as I thought it was love or, you know, as far as I knew it.
So craziest thing you've seen as a worker in the plant. I done seen some shit. I've seen a couple stabbings.
I saw a girl, you know, those mallets that knock in the trim.
I'm the
you know those rubber mallets, those hollow rubber mallets. Yeah, girl got to work on another girl.
Beat her with the mallet in front of you? Did you break it up?
I'm not getting, man, listen. Because, see, the rule in the plant, is you cannot put your hands on somebody, but if they put their hands on you, you have the right to defend yourself. So for me, man, I'm not putting myself in a position for you to put your hands on me, because all bets are off if you do that.
Craziest shit you've seen as a manager?
As a manager, I didn't see that much crazy stuff. And I'm going to hope it's because people had respected me enough to make sure they hid everything they did. But I didn't see crazy stuff on my lines. I had one TL who thought he was five steps ahead a lot of times, and I had to let him know one day that I watched him do a whole like I see you shucking and jiving, bro, so don't think you're outsmarting me.
You mean shucking and jiving, what does that mean?
Shucking and jiving means one of those discolored bottles.
Discolored bottle. So listen,
promptly FMLA'd on me because he knew
what she's trying to say, people, is that Aquafina ain't brown, motherfucker. Exactly. I think that's what she's trying to say.
And Pepsi isn't amber.
It could be.
Hennessy is.
Not, but I like a little water in my Pepsi because it's kind of strong. So, I'm assuming that you don't work in the plants no more. You left the automotive industry alone?
No, I left years ago.
You left years ago.
It's been years.
And what made you decide to leave?
I'm grateful I made the decision, but... I was looking for the next step up. I had done everything that was asked of me. I was seeing upward trajectory for other people. And I wasn't being given those opportunities. When I brought it to, I didn't come up with a name for this guy. Call him corny to the T.
The Crib Keeper.
Very, very, nah, not the Crib Keeper. Nah, Baldy. And I ain't talking about the guy, my ride or die. I'm talking about somebody well above us. But
okay.
I had a meeting and I got a lot of BS and I don't like to be BS'd. And I made that decision in that moment to go hard to find something else. And okay. Over the course of about 45 days, it happened. And I got an offer that they couldn't even match.
Couldn't even match. So you moved up and got the fuck on.
Yeah.
So it's like, wow, it seems like, you know, you had a lot of experience in there. It looks like these union officials kind of rubbed you the wrong way a little bit.
Not all. I will say, of the union leadership that I had to come into interface with regularly, only one. Now, if you're saying over all the ones that I've ever had to deal with, I'll say I had three static situations with them. Two of them were on a inferior. They just didn't want to hear what this woman had to say, and they just weren't hearing it. And then the other one, he gossips like a female.
All right. So question, like in regards to, you know, because I'm assuming that with you being a manager, your way of disciplining people is, you said putting them on notice was issuing write-ups. What's the process for when you're having an issue with when a employee has an issue with a manager?
So typically they will write a statement. Will get with their union steward and they will write a statement, and that will go straight to HR, and then HR takes that and investigates it from there with basically partnership with the union.
Have you ever had a statement written against you?
I've had several.
Several.
I have had several grievances. I want every single one.
Now, when you say grievances, now, cause again, we want to kind of break it down. we want to break it down for those who have never stepped into that realm. What is a grievance?
A grievance is basically an appeal to the judgment of the write-up.
Okay.
So if I wrote you up for being late to the line and you feel that I was picking on you, you could go to your union steward and say, she's picking on me. I really wasn't late. Or other people are late and she only is getting me for it. And they have them write a statement on that.
So when they write a statement, is writing a statement is the same as writing a grievance or?
It's pretty much the same thing, because once it goes once HR and the union talk it out, sometimes things are brought down. So sometimes disciplinaries are thrown out. Sometimes, if you gave somebody a 30, even though they are on a 30 day, they'll bump it down to a 3 day and they'll just repeat a step.
Okay. And you say of every grievance written against you, you won?
I believe I won every one, with the exception of overtime, like when you have to canvass for overtime. And I think it was like one or two times I missed somebody and they caught me on that. If I miss you and you got that seniority, you still get paid for the day if you file a grievance.
So seniority still matters.
Okay. So once that happened to me, I started making worksheets for myself and my line. So I knew everybody's seniority before I even asked you about overtime.
Okay. So you kind of play. So they got you one time. You kind of
play
ahead.
You got to play chess.
So what's the end result of, let's say, a manager losing grievances?
It depends on how severe it is. If it's something really, really serious where you did something really egregious, you could lose your job.
Have you seen anyone lose their job over grievance?
No.
Never.
I have never seen anyone lose their job. I've never seen anybody do anything just super egregious either, though.
So what's the highest penalty you've seen a manager face due to a grievance?
The only thing I've ever seen is as far as a penalty for a manager, I've never seen them like get time off or in danger of losing their job off the things that I've seen. But you got to deal with that kickback when you get on that floor, back with that union membership.
So basically just like motherfuckers, nah, 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 nah type shit.
Yeah. And if you don't do your job the right way, you're going to lose the trust of the union membership. And those are still your employees.
So you kind of feel like it's a working relationship between you and the people that work up under you.
Okay,
that would make you a good manager, because some of the managers that I work up under don't understand that the people are their biggest asset.
You also don't have managers who jump on the line. I would jump on the line and help. You know, that's what I did.
Well, I assume that I thought they weren't supposed to work.
We are not supposed to work on the line, but there are things you can do to help the operation.
Okay.
Where you're not doing the operations, but I would carry parts for repairmen. I would do all kinds of stuff to get things. I would take parts and put them in the truck so they could go to the truck and get their repair, but the parts are already there.
Now, what this show has kind of showed me is, because it's like there's so many different facets and so many different positions. You know, in the plant, we got the TBTs. Now that we didn't got management in the building, we might have to hear the story from the view of maybe an operator. You know, I might have to get a TBT in here. I may actually have to get a steward in here.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't seem like your relationship is too good with the stewards. Maybe we can have y'all get in a circle and fight like pit bulls or some shit like that.
I'm with it.
Yeah, you know. So, you said you're not working in the automotive industry anymore.
Nope.
You gave it up.
Yep.
If you could go back and change anything during your tenure of employment in the automotive industry, what would you change?
I would change not the friendships I made, but the relationships that didn't serve me anything.
Okay.
When I was there. But for the most part, I still talk to people that I worked right with, that I managed. I still have relationships with people. Like I said, you have every type of person. You have the person who had goals like me. From the day I walked in there, I knew this isn't it. This is just where I have to be for the moment. Then you have dirtbags. You got,
yeah,
you know, you got the punks.
I met some dirtbags. What I learned in the plan is it's kind of like what I've seen is that it's like a big fish in a small pond type thing. Like
and crabs in a barrel.
Yeah, a lot of motherfuckers don't really exist in the real world. So it's kind of like they come to the plant and it's like I'm a fucking basketball player in the high school.
Oh, yeah.
My name. Definitely. It's like their name on the seniority list is the only claim to fame
definitely.
They have.
Definitely.
And, you know, it's funny you say the crabs in the barrel situation is because it's like I constantly, you know, get into battles, rather it be in person or on it. That's what I wanted to ask you as well, too. Mm-hmm. Is management really reviewing Facebook pages? Because there's a lot of social media information that goes out regarding Facebook pages and groups and people FMLAing out and going on vacations.
My honest opinion, absolutely not.
So what do you...
I snuck into a group and the girl who was the admin of the group didn't realize it was me because on my social media, I wear makeup. I'm done up. And when I go to work, I never wear makeup. Like, that's a rule of mine. I never. So I look different. She didn't recognize me for months. So I was able to look at everything on there. And after looking at all that, I knew they can't be looking at this.
Did you use any of the information that you found when you were inside the group?
No. The only thing that I did have to do, this was probably in the last couple weeks of my time with Chrysler. I had a situation where an employee of mine got caught up, a whole married man got caught up, and wifey got on Facebook and had gone through the phone, and I was listed as, you know, what I was supposed to be listed as, but she didn't believe that. So I was posting on social media as that. And I literally had to call and be like, hey, I don't know what that is, but this ain't that.
So when you say you had to call, you had to call his wife or?
I called his phone and his wife happened to have his phone.
Oh, so you called, okay, so you were calling one of your operators. Okay.
Yeah, I'm calling one of my operators. He's on the line. And at this time, he's not on the line, but I see on Facebook that I'm on Facebook. And they're saying, this your so-called, you know, she's on her rant.
Oh, so she's
on a rant.
Oh, so she outed
so
you.
So she think that I'm part of this illicit stuff and I'm really his manager in the phone.
I don't know, April. She might have had you right.
Nah. What I don't do is lie.
I don't know, April.
I don't lie. If I chopped it down, I chopped it down.
I don't know, April.
I don't lie.
Well, you know, listen, man, you know. What I will say about this is, you know, the plan, like I said before, you know, the plan is, you know, some people love it, you know, most hate it, you know, for some it's a stepping stone, for some it's a lifestyle, but we know we never want to negate the fact or the hole that the falling of the, or the decline rather, of the automotive industry has caused Southeast Michigan. You know, we kind of somewhat on the comeback, but we still got a lot of work to do.
Definitely.
April, I would like to thank you so much. For coming in. You didn't give me none of them juicy secrets about what y'all be talking about in the meetings, but we might have to get to that on it. Might
have to do another episode. There's a lot to talk about. I experienced a lot within. It was eye-opener.
Well, I mean, listen.
But it served for what it was supposed to serve me.
What I'm going to definitely do is I'm going to, you know, because, and this is for my union members as well. You know, there's a lot of there's the UAW member referendum vote coming up. And I'm saying this too for the union members. We're going to push management out the way for a minute. We have the one member, one vote initiative coming up. And, you know, as I earlier spoke in the conversation regarding the convictions to the UAW upper leadership, who is charged with negotiating on behalf of the membership. There's been a lot of corruption found. For the first time since the creation of the UAW, we are finally being given the ability to vote for the international leadership, which is called one member, one vote. Previously, before the one member, one vote referendum went out, we used a delegate system to elect the International Executive Board. That delegate system, in my view, has failed the membership completely. Nepotism, buddy favors, people being your friend in your face and stabbing you in the back, people not negotiating on behalf of the membership that they represent. All of these things have come because there is no accountability within the UAW. With the delegate system, the representatives are not picked by the people. So when you're not picked by the people, you're not really for the people. So what I will say is to everybody, if you are a UAW dues paying member, I don't give a fuck if you work the big three. I don't give a fuck if you work at the sub plant. Pay attention to your mail. Get that referendum signed. Get it filled out. We going for one member, one vote to get all those motherfuckers up out of here, because White Castle makes damn near the same amount as a fucking auto worker. And that shit just ain't right. Inflation is up. We need to be making $50 a goddamn hour. Them trucks cost $100,000 a year, and I ain't getting no goddamn money.
Let me just add.
Yeah.
I was once a union member, and I was a manager. But I will say, union membership, set the bar for y'all stewards. Like the bad guy just said, nepotism and your buddy and all that, that's not their job. Their job is to go to bat for you and to do the right thing by you. I've seen the problems with that, and I believe it's because people don't do their due diligence on making sure they're voting for the right person. Do your due diligence. Make sure you have the right representative for yourselves.
And stop giving the stewards coochie for unpaid days off.
That part too.
You know what I'm saying? If you're going to fuck, get some money up out of it. Stop giving motherfucking ass up.
Yeah, just stop it, because it makes it hard for women like me who just did their job.
No, don't stop it. Nah, I'm not going to
stop it.
No, hold on. Nah, listen, we don't need that type of negativity on the Bad Guy Radio Show. Listen, man, it's been another episode, man. This is the Plant Life episode. I think I see this conversation going somewhere else, and it's going to go somewhere else, because y'all guys know that I never leave a stone unturned. But in the meantime, in between time, we getting the fuck up out of here, because I got to go to work tonight.
Oh, and thank you. Wait, congratulations on show number 25. You had the best guest host.
Listen, yes. Congratulations on show 25. I am currently at about 9,000 and some odd numbers. I'm pretty sure this will be the show that pushes me over the 10,000 download threshold. I thank y'all for fucking with me, man. We going into my second year. My anniversary is about a week away. Another secret that I'm not gonna say a secret, but something I'm working on for you guys is Bad TV. Bad TV, my YouTube channel, is starting up.
Okay.
We got the visuals coming. It's just been a little bit slow because, you know, my content is kind of racy. Some of my people got to get fake names and shit when they come in the studio, so I got to watch how I take pictures. But don't worry about none of that, because we got to sign these non-disclosure apps, or as R. Kelly has little girls, my parents sign permission slips. And we're going to put the videos out. Until next time, my niggas, roll up the weed, smoke the weed, light the weed, and stay away from the perks, because they fake and they got fentanyl all in them. We out this bitch, man. It's the Bad Guy.
I got it. Do you have your passport? Did you get your shots? Girl, would you like to come back with Rob to America? America. Do you have your passport? Did you get your shots? Girl, would you like to come back with Rob to America? America. 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 Do you have your passport? Did you get your job?